Hello, and welcome to Tantra Mar Report on CHMA 106.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Sackville, New Brunswick, the heart of the Maritimes, on the traditional and unceded lands of the Mi'kmaq people. I'm Erica Butler. It's Friday, November 12th. Coming up on today's show, we talk with the owner of Sackville's newest feline celebrity, Donald the Cat, about the online attention, both positive and negative, that he's been getting. Also, we get an astronomy lesson from Dr. Catherine Lovkin, explaining some of the science behind the beautiful pictures of the northern lights over the Tantramar Marsh captured last week by photographer Sean Chapman. But first, more local news and information. A rally in support of Sackville's striking QP workers is being organized for today from noon to 1 p.m. at the corner of York and Main. A graphic circulating on social media says Mount Allison faculty, staff, students, and other community members will gather with striking QP workers to show our support in their struggle for a fair contract. The Mount Allison Faculty Association and Mount Allison Students Union have agreed to help publicize the event, which is being organized by politics professor Dave Thomas. Sackville and the Tantramar region will come out of circuit breaker measures today at 6 p.m., meaning the single household rule is lifted. But the region is still under rules of the mandatory order, which ask that each household limits contacts to 20 additional people outside the household. While Sackville will enjoy some freedom to gather, the circuit breaker will continue for another 7 days in Moncton, Dieppe, and Riverview. Chief Medical Officer of Health Jennifer Russell said in a statement Thursday that there is evidence people in Greater Moncton have not been following the one household rule. Russell said, "It is critical that everyone follows the rules and not have gatherings in homes, as we have seen transmission in households from people who shouldn't be in the home in the first place due to the circuit breaker restrictions." She says, "Transmission in households is where we're seeing more than half of the new cases in the area." Public Health also said it would be increasing enforcement of circuit breaker rules in Moncton, Dieppe, and Riverview, and encouraged people to report when they saw others breaking the rules. Zone 2, St. John, will also come out of the circuit breaker measures on Friday, but most of Zone 7 in the Miramichi will start their circuit breaker. New Brunswick Public Health reported 70 new cases of COVID-19 on Thursday, forcing active case counts to climb to 580. There were 21 new cases in Zone 1, with 18 of those cases under investigation and 3 connected to previously confirmed cases. The football Mounties finished their regular season in second place last week, and tomorrow they'll take on the Bishop's Gators in a semifinal match for the AUS Championship. If they win, they will go on to play the Championship Loney Bowl on November 20th. Tomorrow's game is slated for 2 p.m., and tickets are available for pre-purchase online. Mount Allison students don't need a ticket but must show ID, and all attendees must show proof of a vaccination. A Cumberland County super spreader event may not have impacted New Brunswick. New Brunswick Public Health says that although the two provinces collaborate regularly, they have not been contacted directly by Nova Scotia about contact tracing for a multi-day event that took place in Cumberland at the end of October. The faith-based event did not follow Nova Scotia's proof of vaccination protocols and has been linked to a number of case clusters in Nova Scotia, including an outbreak at a long-term care home in Pugwash. 3 more cases were identified Wednesday at the East Cumberland Lodge Nursing Home. A total of 20 residents and 2 staff members at the home have now tested positive. Sackville has a new celebrity, and his name is Donald. He's friendly and charming and roams the town, barging into houses and university residences, seeking out snacks and head scratches. Donald is, of course, a cat. But he's a cat with a local Facebook fan club clocking in at 685 members, and for whom Bagtown Brewery is currently concocting a dedicated brew. There are, of course, up and downsides to Donald's social mobility. He spreads a lot of joy, as evidenced by those who post about their chance encounters with him on social media. But there's also those who worry for Donald's welfare or who are perturbed by his roaming habit. Tobias Paul is Donald's caretaker, and he's felt both the love and the hate in messages online in relation to Donald. Paul stopped by CHMA Studios this week to talk about his remarkable cat. Tobias Paul, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Erica.
All right, you have a very popular cat.
Yeah, he is the friendliest cat I've ever met in my life. And he just wants to say hello to every single person he sees. So,
yeah. How long have you had him? And his name is Donald, we should say, in case there are people who aren't yet familiar with him.
Yeah, and there are more people familiar with him than familiar with me. I was walking down the street with him yesterday, and we passed by a group of children, and they all excitedly shouted out, "Donald, Donald," and ran over to say hello, and I was left there being like, well, I guess with these children. But I've had him, I picked him up at the beginning of June of this year, so 5-6 months.
About. Okay, yeah. So it's a new relationship.
Fairly new, yes.
Has he, has he been, did he have that friendly demeanor right from the get-go?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we picked him up from the SPCA, and he was a stray. They said he was about 6 years old. Myself and the vet in town think that that was a little generous. We think he was closer to four, so somewhere between 4 and 6. And just as soon as we got him, he didn't want to leave our side. And like myself and my partner, if we go for walks around town, kind of as I alluded to earlier, he will just follow along beside us, like no leash or anything. He just wants to be near humans at all times and always has been like that. So I don't know if he was a stray his whole life, or maybe he potentially had a family, or at least like other families that would take after him while he was a stray, because he's certainly used to people.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, I see lots of love for Donald.
Yeah.
Online mostly. There's even a group dedicated to him on Facebook.
Yeah.
He is very much becoming a local celebrity. But you have mentioned there is also negative attention that comes with that.
Oh, yeah. There's lots of negativity. And some of it is, more abstract, like people just voicing their opinions about what cats should be allowed to do or not be allowed to do, which is fine, because it's like, you know what, we've all got our different ideas. I just try to keep care of my pet best I can. But I've also received a lot of personal messages telling me very just derogatory comments about my character. I've had people threaten to take Donald, if they ever see him, they'll take him into their homes and they'll never let him outside again, which good luck with that. He screams like hell if you trap that cat inside, so it wouldn't last very long. I even had one person who I won't name, but just to put out the severity of this, threatened. They told me that if they ever found Donald, they would take him home and feed him to their dogs. Now, obviously, I don't believe that that person was serious about it, but they messaged me out of the blue over nothing. I'd never met this person in my life, and they told me that they were going to kill my cat if they ever found my cat. And these are the types of messages that I receive when Donald, when someone posts a picture of Donald being like, hey, we met a lovely cat at the park, I end up getting death threats, which is, well, it's nonsense, really. It's mm-hmm. absolutely ridiculous.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn. No, and that's why, I understand the thing, and I guess specifically like about being outside, if your issue is with cats being outdoor cats, that's fine, but I'm not fighting you on that. I have an outdoor cat, but if you want to argue about whether or not people should have outdoor cats, go to town council and have them pass a bylaw. Don't fight with me. Fight with them. It's not my problem.
Right. So. Okay. So you're saying cats are allowed outside. So is Donald.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. Yeah. There have been, actually, there was a person recently at town council who brought up that very issue. And I know it can be controversial and there's lots of varying opinions on it.
Absolutely.
And you mentioned that when you keep Donald inside, he makes a racket. So,
yeah. I mean, he's got a lot of friends in town, and he does a little circuit, I'm certain, where he goes here and gets a little food and a little love and then goes somewhere else. And he's got a pretty consistent schedule. Like when we usually let him out in the morning, he comes home after an hour or so, and then he's at home most of the afternoon, and then he'll go out in the evening for a couple of hours and return after dark. So he's not spending his whole day outside, but he has got a little routine that he likes. And I know it's because people are feeding him. And of course, that's also one of the things, I ask people to not let him into their house and to try not to feed him. Like a treat here or there is fine, but like don't put out a bowl of food for him, because he's a instinctual animal. He's food motivated. He was a stray most of his life. And if he knows where he's going to get food, he's going to keep coming back and, mm-hmm. and getting that food. And he has more than enough at home. I can't control what people do to him because he's an outdoor cat. I understand that. But, you know, I can ask people to not let him into their homes.
Right. And mm-hmm. So I was going to say that. I mean, so if people encounter Donald, you're hoping that, I mean, like, what advice do you have for them? So in other words, don't feed him. He doesn't need food because he is being fed, I guess, is key, because that's also a health issue, right?
Absolutely, you know? Absolutely.
And then don't let him in to your home.
Yeah, I hate saying those things because, you know, Donald just wants love. And the food thing, like you say, is a health thing. He's gotten a little chunkier since being in Sackville. But, you know, if he wants to be a little overweight, he's had a hard life, you know. But the letting them into their homes, you know, it's not even necessarily the issue of, you know, like we were talking about the circuit earlier. If he visited you every morning at 9:30 and he came in and you guys played with Donald and then he went home, that'd be fine. But the thing is the more people that bring him into their homes or even their businesses, the more he thinks that he can go into anyone's homes or businesses because he's a cat. He doesn't have that critical thinking ability. And so a lot of people end up being concerned because they might not know Donald, but they step out to go for a walk and Donald darts into their house because all Donald knows is if I go through a door, I get fed. And that's, you know, not a great thought process. So it's not about limiting the love for Donald. It's just about making sure that he understands that there's only one home that he belongs to.
All right. Yeah. Now, in terms of Donald's online popularity,
yes.
You know, with the negative attention that you're getting, those negative messages, are you okay with Donald having this presence?
Yeah, I mean, so we've had him, like we say, for almost 6 months or whatever that it was since June. And in the middle of the summer, he got a lot of attention as well. And I got a lot of negative attention. And like you say, I can't discount all the positive attention. There are so many people who love Donald, and I'm really thankful for all the people that
he really
talked to me. Or...
Yeah, he really seems to bring a lot of joy to people, just walking down the street. And even without that, there's some confused people who say, I have this cat who seems to want to stay with me now.
Yes.
What do I do? So it's confusing for some. But yeah, but most people seem to know him and want to pet him. And just,
yeah. And so you know, when at first I was receiving that all that attention, didn't really know what to do, and it kind of just blew over. But about 2 or 3 weeks ago, well, maybe even 4 weeks ago now, I think Donald discovered the student population. And it was largely, I think, actually, we'll blame the Mounties and the football games, because all that noise, I don't live too far off campus, and all that noise attracted him down, and now there's a crowd of people. And then he found all the students. And students, of course, are going to jump on the opportunity to take and pet Donald. And it's great. And I love it. But the fact is, he's just out there more now. And there's a lot more attention. And so I've gotten lost in what I'm saying. But it was a flip-flop of the attention. In the Facebook group, you know, there's the one side, which is it does bring more attention to him, which means, you know, some of that attention is going to be negative. But it also allows me to kind of keep track of him, which I do appreciate, because obviously I worry when he's not there. And it's not that I'm worried about him taking care of himself or something happening to him. I'm actually worried that people are picking him up and either taking him somewhere or bringing him into their homes. And so, while there are some negative aspects of his popularity in the online world, it does allow me, and very thankfully, 500 other people to like keep an eye out for him. And when someone says, hey, whose cat is this that jumped into my house and then is having a nap on my windowsill, people can be like, that's Donald, you can kick him out, he'll be fine. So I'm really thankful for it. Yeah.
All right, Tobias, thanks so much for, you know, coming in to share what's going on. And I'm sorry to hear about those negative messages. That's obviously not okay.
No.
But yeah, and I, you know, I'll continue to follow Donald's adventures online. Have you thought of a GoPro at all?
Yeah, I'll leave just with this one thing, which is, you know, I'd love some sort of GoPro, but he's lost every collar we've put on him. Which, you know, and at the end of the day, you know, I'm not spending $100 a month buying him collars every time. But it would be fun. I know, I believe Julia Feltham's cat and Michael Freeman's cat Duncan had a GoPro for a while. So maybe I'll talk to them, see what can happen.
All right. It could be, you know, a Sackville phenomenon. We'll see.
Thanks so much, Erica.
Thank you. That was Tobias Paul, owner and caretaker of Donald, a Sackville cat. On Monday, we spoke with Amherst photographer Sean Chapman about the stunning images he captured of the northern lights above the Tantramar Marsh. Today, we'll get a bit of a science lesson about exactly what is happening in Sean Chapman's beautiful and colorful photos. Dr. Catherine Lovkin is an astronomy professor and head of Mount Allison's physics department. She stopped by CHMA Studios on Wednesday to talk Aurora Borealis. Dr. Catherine Lovkin, thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
So, these beautiful photos that Sean Chapman has taken of the northern lights above the Tantramar Marsh, I gotta say I was surprised because I didn't think that this far south we would be able to see the northern lights. Now,
it's not super common, but it does happen from time to time. This is, I think, the second or third time in the 8 years I've been here in Sackville that we've been able to see them this far south.
Now, did you, Sean Chapman is like an enthusiast and like monitors and has websites warning him when there might be northern lights to be seen. Were you aware that solar storm was happening or that there would be visible last week?
I didn't find out until after the fact. There's a Twitter feed you can follow that warns about geomagnetic storms, but they usually give you fairly short notice. And so I don't usually find out until after the aurora have disappeared or after the sun's come up and you can't see them anymore.
Sean Chapman was saying he gets 15 minutes notice and he has to sort of drop what he's doing and leave immediately.
Yeah, we do not get a lot of warning about these solar storms. So
why is that?
They're just unpredictable. There's no way, we can't forecast them the way we can the weather. We can predict that the sun gets more active and so that we're more likely to see solar storms over the next few years, but we can't predict there's going to be one now. It's a very sudden event, and then it just happens, and you have to be ready for it.
Mm-hmm. So. Even long-term weather, beyond beyond a very short window, even weather on Earth you can't predict accurately. Right. Which is the bane of everyone's planning existence.
Yes.
Sean Chapman's photos were very colorful, but as he said, to his naked eye, it didn't appear that way. What's going on there? Why is the camera able to pick up such vivid colors that a human eye is not?
Human eyes are just not as sensitive as the camera, the CCD, the digital device inside the camera that's recording the light. So we see the same thing with astronomical images. Though there it's usually by taking long exposures. So I don't know what kind of exposure times he used, but that would help too. If you have a long exposure, you collect more light, and so you can see the colors that are normally too faint to be seen with just your eyes.
Right. So the colors are there, like the frequency of that light is there, but it just hasn't been been picked up by our eyes.
Yeah. So there's, you know, maybe 10 photons a second, say, to just make up some numbers, and that's not enough for your eyes to register as seeing some red. But if you have a camera that can really detect those well, or if you leave the exposure, the camera lens open for a long time, say 5 seconds, then you get 50 red photons, and then that's enough to show up as red.
Here's a kind of maybe a big question. I don't know if you can sum it up. What are the northern lights? What's going on when we see those lights?
Okay, it's a pretty complicated process. So I mentioned these solar storms. So they all start with the sun. And the sun has what we call the solar wind, which is just charged particles, things like electrons and protons, hydrogen atoms that have lost their electrons. So they have a charge. And they're streaming off from the sun all the time, but then there are these events that solar storms where they get more of them. And so those charged particles stream out through space and eventually they encounter Earth's magnetic field. And Earth's magnetic field is a dipole magnetic field. So the same kind of magnetic field as you have with a bar magnet. You've got the North Pole and then magnetic field lines coming out and making sort of big half circles and going back in at the South Pole. And when the charged particles encounter our magnetic field, they get caught and they get funneled in along those field lines towards the poles. So they can't reach the Earth's surface at the equator because of these magnetic fields. And that's good for us because these particles are very high energy and they'd be very damaging to our bodies if they could actually reach the surface and hit us. It's kind of like ultraviolet radiation, the same idea. They've just got a lot of energy and they can damage your DNA. But they do get funneled in. They have to follow the magnetic field. And so they go in along the poles. And so normally, auroras show up near the poles where these charged particles then start to interact with the particles in our atmosphere. Because they have so much energy, they strip the electrons off things like oxygen in the atmosphere. And then when the electrons recombine, get back together with the oxygen atoms, they release light. And that's what we see as the aurora. So in normal times, that happens near the pole. But during a solar storm, there's so many of these electrons coming from the sun that the magnetic field kind of gets overwhelmed. And so they get funneled in at the pole, but also closer down towards the equator. And the stronger the storm, the farther south they're visible.
So if you know, we were able to see what Sean Chapman was photographing last week, then I suppose farther north, it would have even been more vivid and stronger. Possibly. Yeah.
They tend to appear in sort of a band.
Oh, okay.
So it might not have been visible further north.
It's not always more as you go north, but normally the frequency of seeing them happens more in the north. Sean Chapman mentioned that he had heard that this was kind of a 1-in-100-year solar storm. Do we know anything about that for sure?
I don't know that I would say that for sure. The sun, these solar storms, and they're related to sunspots as well, occur on an 11-year cycle. And this current solar cycle just started in 2019. And so it's really just ramping up its activity. So we can expect to see more storms over the next few years. The peak, I think, is supposed to be 2025 or 2026. And this is a lower activity solar storm or solar cycle predicted to be slightly lower activity than average. So we've had more active suns in the past, solar cycles in the past. So I don't think it's not common, but I wouldn't say it's 1 in 100 years. It's more frequent than that.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, if things are expected to ramp up or peak by 2025, does that mean we might have more chances?
We very well might have more chances, yeah.
All right. So people have to, sign up for whatever notification they need to be able to get their 15 minutes notice.
there's lots of places. There's a geomagnetic storm watch. There's websites, there's Twitter feeds. You can get alerts. And then to view them, all you need is a clear view of the northern horizon and a nice dark sky. So I think part of the reason the storm last week produced such good aurora is because it was also at the new moon. And so the moon was not producing a lot of light. And so the skies were much darker, which makes it easier to see the aurora.
Nice. Now, you mentioned that the magnetic field, Earth's magnetic field, is essentially protecting us from those particles coming off the sun. That's so interesting. And I had no idea. If the northern lights are more common in the north, does that mean there's less protection in the north? Or do we ever have to worry about the not being protected by our magnetic field?
The only time it's come up, so it comes up in space exploration. So when the astronauts went to the moon, they had to pass through the Earth's magnetic field. So they had to go sort of out the poles. So they weren't going through these bands of charged particles. And it's a real concern if we ever send a manned mission or a crewed mission to Mars to be able to protect the astronauts from solar storms, because they will be well outside of Earth's magnetic field at that point. Okay. And Mars doesn't have its own magnetic field, so they have to be able to protect them on the surface as well.
One more strike against habitation on Mars. Damn. Okay. All right. Well, Catherine, I really appreciate you telling us about this today. Thanks so much for dropping by.
It's my pleasure.
That was astronomer and Mount Allison professor Dr. Catherine Lovkin. That's it for CHMA's Tantramar Report for this Friday, November 12th. As always, we hope you'll get in touch with comments or questions at news@chmafm.com. I'm Erica Butler. Thanks for listening.